Hello, welcome to Publish Me, a monthly podcast series of the AS21 Podcast Network, where we explore the publishing process of the fantasy epic, The Will of the Magi. I'm your host, Keith F. Shelvin, publisher of AS21 Media, and here to join me as always is...
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Dickinson Russell, the author of The Will of the Magi. I hope you're all enjoying your summer. I hope you are all not baking and cooking and then getting drenched like I am here in Jersey. It's awful here.
And I'm Rhonda Gaynor, design consultant for AS21 and the book cover artist for The Will of the Magi. Hi.
Do you have air conditioning yet, Rhonda?
No, just some fans, and we have a window unit, but we haven't installed it because it's stupid heavy, but, you know, we're not melted yet, so.
Okay. That's good. That's good. This is the August 2018 edition of the Publish Me podcast, Chapter 41. Today we'll be discussing sci-fi versus fantasy. Our guest today is Rishi Ray. We'll have him on in just a minute to discuss his new book. But first, let's get an update on where we are, what's happened this past month of July. So, Paul, what do you got? Where are we with the editing process?
Editing process is going well. Mm-hmm. Corey sent me a pair of chapters. I sent them back, so we're plugging away as, you know, best we can. All that's really going on with the Magi front, just, you know, getting through the edits, getting through, getting everything sent back and forth, and working through that, all that fun stuff. In other projects, one of my projects has been a superhero storyline. And I've met a guy who is connected to a dozen of the top artists for DC and Marvel.
Nice.
And who knows them on first name, you know, let's have coffee basis. So.
Okay.
I got a, if anyone looks at my author page, you'll see the signed poster of Daredevil that I won via his personal cookings page, which is quite amusing and entertaining. I'll leave it there. So,
okay, cool.
Yep. It's fun times.
Indeed. Now, Rhonda, you were at BlurredCon this weekend?
Yeah. The energy of the show was really great. There's some really creative cosplays. There were some Wakandan Sailor Scouts. Those are my favorites.
Nice.
Plenty of Black Panthers. Many different iterations of Black Panther. Some of them were really, really interesting. One guy had, like, black leather jacket but with, like, the jewelry kind of applique on top of it. It was super cool. Yeah, it was a chill, pretty chill show.
Nice.
I enjoyed it.
Cool, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's been a pretty, well, there's been a lot going on, but a pretty subdued month for some of AS21 stuff. We didn't have a bunch of events like we had in April, May, June. You know, no book fairs this month. Nice break from that after having Gaithersburg and DC Author Fest and Kensington and Comic-Con and all that fun. Then, of course, it all starts again in the fall, but, you know, we're kind of relaxing for now and dealing with other things. And one of those things is our new partnership with AS21 Audio with the Impact Radius Group. So we'll be having a lot more sponsors on AS21 Podcasts starting with this week. If you listen to the Literary This Week that posted on Sunday, you'll hear at least three additional new sponsors on the World's Only Podcast, published on Monday. There's a couple new sponsors there. There's a new sponsor on Between the Beltways, which posted last Saturday. Amazing what's coming together. And of course, those sponsors are like Target, Abe Books, Simply Learn, Photo Lemur, and BookBite. So we're happy to have all of those sponsors on board with us, helping us out. And hopefully we'll all grow together and, you know, and our success will translate to success for them, which comes back to us in the form of, you know, monetary support. So remember to visit the website, go to the page for Publish Me, and you'll be able to see the banner bars for some of the sponsors as well as some other AS21 podcast pages. Click on those links. If you see something there that you want, go ahead and make a purchase. And of course, every purchase that's done from our link comes back to us in support. So if you like listening to our podcast and want to keep them going, go ahead and visit any of those great sponsors using the links on our pages or in the show notes on iTunes, and, you know, show your support by supporting those great businesses, and then we all succeed together. Or, of course, you could just give us money on Patreon, but, you know, that's good, too.
It all works, and it all builds the empire.
Absolutely. Now, remember, you can reach out to us every month on Facebook, facebook.com/publishpodcast, on Twitter at publishpodcast, email us, publishpodcast@as21.com. We come to you each month, hosted by Podomatic, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, and our home of the web, audio.as21.com. Now, we had a discussion last month. We talked a little bit about copyright, and we went into farther on the discussion of fantasy, the greatest fantasy novels of all time, and, you know, what fantasy books first got us involved. And one of those parts of a discussion was separating sci-fi and fantasy, which is something that commonly you'll find in bookstores, those two groups put together. So we had the opportunity with this month. We had a guest suggested to me by a previous guest that was Bharat Krishnan, who was on a couple months ago, sent me information about his good friend Rishi Ray, and Rishi is joining us today as we continue our discussion, now actually comparing sci-fi and fantasy. Now, before we get to that interview, let's do a quick ad break. So remember, the listeners to this and the other AS21 podcasts are eligible for a free audiobook from Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/AS21 and sign up today and choose from 180,000 titles. I just finished all of Philip Pullman's writings, having done the original His Dark Materials series, and just read La Belle Sauvage, the first book of the Book of Dust series that he just started. And next up for me is Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. It's a book that was on the top of many bestseller lists throughout 2017-2018, so I'm going to be checking it out now and see exactly what everyone else was so interested in. Paul or Rana, have you guys been listening to any audiobooks lately?
Yeah, I actually bought two Great Courses audiobooks 2 weeks ago. I love the Great Courses series, so I got one on building your vocabulary and one on, you know, building better sentences. So, I mean, like, English grammar and English vocab development, you know, which I think is great with the Great Courses stuff, because, you know, I'm always looking to learn more.
Absolutely. Rana, have you been listening to anything good lately?
No audiobooks, but I've been listening/watching some GDC talks from the Game Developers Conference on the GDC Vault. So I was at GDC this past year as a conference associate, so now I get free access to the vault. Woo!
Nice.
Some things are available for free, but other things are like members only. And so I've been watching a lot of talks on art direction in video games and animation and, you know, like, what the heck is VR? Where's it going? What's it doing? And other topics like that. So I'm learning a lot about the games industry and... you know, just oohing and aahing at all the cool art that I'm seeing.
Nice.
Cool. All right, so be sure to check out Audible today. Sign up by visiting audibletrial.com/AS21. You get your first month for free, get that first audiobook download, and once you have it forever. So choose from 180,000 titles today and put your reading in your ear. Additional sponsorship is also provided by PhotoLemur. Save 40% on the smartest photo enhancement software. Make your photos perfect with cutting-edge technology AI that automatically analyzes and adjusts your picture to restore lost details, boost lighting, and colors. Sign up today at PhotoLemur.com. Also provided by BookBite. BookBite has helped students rent and buy textbooks affordably since 1999. Based out of Salem, Oregon, and passionate about helping students and members of a community reach their full potential through education. That's why they went into the used textbook business back in the 20th century, because they believe everyone should have affordable access to the tools they need to learn. So buy or sell your used textbooks today at BookBite.com. Also, we'd like to thank you for coming on board with us. Is abooks at abooks.com, a passion for books. All right, that's a lot of sponsors to get through, but now it's time for our interview. So I'd like to welcome today Mr. Rishi Ray. Rishi fell in love with stories at a young age, devouring everything from Batman comics to Hardy Boy mysteries in a time when books and imagination were the only cures for boredom. After graduating from the University of Rochester, he worked as an advertising copywriter in New York City for 6 years and wrote countless screenplays before taking the plunge to write fiction full-time. He published the first novel, The King Between Worlds, in 2015 and will be releasing his second, One Nation Under Gods, in 2018. He currently lives in New Jersey. So welcome to the Publish Me podcast, Mr. Rishi Ray.
Woo! Thank you for having me.
How are you doing today, Rishi?
I'm doing well. I'm actually in that stage after finishing a novel where I'm trying to figure out what to do next.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a very confusing time.
Absolutely.
So you sent me the quick synopsis of your book, but do you want to go ahead and tell our listening audience more about One Nation Under Gods?
Sure. My elevator pitch for One Nation Under Gods is that it's a gritty chase thriller set in a future America that's conquered by godlike beings. So it's the way I would describe it is a futuristic Game of Thrones meets No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Is it like grim, dark science fiction or? So I wouldn't say it's grim or dark. There are dark elements, but in science fiction, in the sense that we're looking at an America that has been conquered by these godlike beings that have actually been created by the government as weapons, but they went out of control. They're now running the country. But there are also a lot of fantasy elements in there in terms of now these godlike beings that are called specials. They have established a kingdom, and that kingdom has obviously a king, a queen, warrior. So there's a little bit of that kind of fantasy element that ties in or that fuses in with the kind of gritty crime element of it as well.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah, very interesting. So what led you to write this story, Rishi?
So I think as probably a lot of writers would know that these ideas started a long time ago as different ideas. I loved comic books growing up, especially like Batman, X-Men, and I've always wanted to write stories about people with superpowers, but not necessarily comic book stories that kind of delved into the darker side of having those powers. What happens to the people who don't have those powers? And for years and years, I just had this story in my head of like these godlike beings taking over America, but I didn't know what the thrust of the story was, what the narrative was. And so I kind of put that idea aside and I just started writing this crime thriller about this guy being chased by drug cartels. And as it would happen, one day, suddenly the two ideas just fused in my head. And I found the narrative engine to kind of bring this big world into like a more compelling story.
Nice.
And yeah, so I started, the idea probably came to me like 6-7 years ago. I started writing it 3 years ago and I just got done about 2 months ago.
Interesting. Nice. Now, you mentioned in your description, it's futuristic, but then inspired by Game of Thrones, which Game of Thrones is definitely considered fantasy, while anything futuristic tends to be sci-fi. So which camp would you specifically put your book in? Would it be something that is on the line, or is it specifically science fiction?
You know, it's I'm trying to decide that right now. I know how important it is to like define your genre when you're self-publishing, but it definitely is somewhere on the line because a lot of the sci-fi novels that I love, like Neuromancer, Hyperion, Altered Carbon, those books all portray like a very dark future, and they can be grim in the sense that humanity has fallen to this place where it's just like technology has taken over, and it's not a very hopeful view of the future. So even though this is set in the future, I think, and it does involve elements like that are sci-fi, the fantasy elements come in where it kind of, it has a more hopeful outlook on humanity. Like even though humanity, at least in America, has been subjugated by this more powerful race, like there still is hope there, there's friendship there, there's a group of people who are fighting together for emancipation.
you know, in terms of genre, I think it straddles the line. Like, I would say it has sci-fi elements, it has fantasy elements, and it also has thriller elements.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
So as far as inspiration and reading, I obviously, going back from this, you talked about being a fan of comic books, and those definitely are things that have been on the line between sci-fi and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
When superpowers seem to be coming from some scientific form, then it's more science fiction. But when they seem more magical, like Doctor Strange or such, then it gets more to the fantasy.
Exactly, right. Yeah, so like the superpowers here, it is a group of people that have been experimented on by the U.S. government and used as weapons, and then they break free of the government, and, you know, they decide to take their lives in their own hands, and it leads to a war between the U.S. and the specials. However, the book doesn't concern itself so much about that war or about the history of the specials. It takes place 10 years after the specials have won the war, and it focuses on the main character, whose name is Houston Holt, and he's a criminal living under special rule, and it follows him as he does a regular job for one of his clients where he has to pick up a truck. And as you find out as you read the book, the truck actually contains something very dangerous that turns his life upside down.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned as science fiction that you enjoyed reading.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Neuromancer. You mentioned Hyperion.
Mm-hmm.
What are some others that inspired you to lean towards the science fiction side of things more towards than the fantasy side of things?
I got into science fiction by reading a lot of Arthur C. Clarke.
Okay.
Nice.
So 2001, Rendezvous with Rama, Hammer of God. Like, I still have all those paperbacks and I love those books. And the funny thing about reading Arthur C. Clarke is that I don't really remember too many of the names of the characters in the book, but I do remember the ideas and I remember the feeling I got after reading it. Like, it just created such a sense of wonder because he was so passionate about the topic of space, about, you know, extraterrestrial life, about humans traveling through space, that especially 2001 was just like a mind-bending read for me. I read it when I was pretty young. So I think for me, science fiction has always interested me in terms that it's always exploring ideas, right? It's always looking forward and exploring ideas like how humans would live in a society far out in the future, like what problems we'd have to cope with. And I think more from that aspect, I would say my novel One Nation Under God is sci-fi, and that it's dealing with those ideas, right? It's dealing with ideas of oppression. It's dealing with ideas of, you know, what does it mean to be a human in a world where you're ruled by non-humans or, you know, a species that is inhuman? Sci-fi for me was never about like the spaceships, the guns, the aliens. It was more about the ideas that were being played with and talked about.
One thing I tend to notice about sci-fi stories versus fantasy stories is that I think sci-fi usually involves some kind of hubris. So would you say that your story focuses on, like, the quality of mankind? Like, oh no, we did this to ourselves. We went too far.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was, when I was writing it, it was less about hubris and more about intolerance. I mean, there is backstory in there about how the specials did try to get their civil rights before they were forced to resort to war. And that was an idea that was really interesting to me about, you know, as humans, we always try to find an enemy. And even if they're not really our enemy, we tend to have this tribal mentality to turn against that which is different. So it was less about hubris and more about just like this group mob mentality of intolerance and, you know, resisting that which is different.
I'm seeing a history lesson here that I'm not sure how prevalent it is, but just hear me out. So, like, historically, I guess what I'm seeing is you're comparing the specials, you know, as a slave revolt, and like the two slave revolts, you know, historically that were always the most terrifying to the cultures that got hit them was the uprising of Spartacus in ancient Rome, where, you know, he took 120,000 slaves and had them rise up, and then blanking really hard on my American history pre-Civil War right now.
Hmm.
But we had the slave rebellion down south that was viewed as the most violent of the slave uprisings before the American Civil War.
Nat Turner in 1831.
Thank you. You're but right. That was 90 slaves.
Right.
And I'm just, you know, just in terms of the numbers in my head, I'm just curious, like, the slave revolt of Spartacus, in terms of percentages, he got a large percentage of the slave population in ancient Rome, but they also, the numbers for the African-American slaves and down in the South during this time, they outnumbered the white population like 50-1. But the damage done by these 90 slaves was astronomical in comparison to the rebellion done by Spartacus and his gladiators 2,000 years prior. So my question here is, are my comparisons correct to the rising up of these specials against the U.S. government, or am I completely off kilter right here?
No, I mean, as you're talking to me, it's making sense that there are parallels to that, even though I didn't consciously write it in that way. I think more what I was looking at was, it's almost like the Revolutionary War, where, you know, it was a group of colonists fighting against the British crown. And in one way, it's different because these specials, they were controlled, but they are far more powerful than regular humans. So it would take a much smaller number of them to overthrow an entire country. But it's interesting that you brought up the slave rebellion. Like, I didn't look at it that way, but it actually does make a lot of sense in terms of like an oppressed minority rising up against their masters.
Right. And it's just that now I can make a secondary comparison to the X-Men, where we have in the X-Men movies, the senator who discusses how try to regulate guns in schools, but you know how, you know, we need to register these mutants because some of these mutants have the power of a nuclear bomb in their fingertips, you know, or in their eye sockets. I think he was referencing Cyclops or whatever. I don't remember exactly. It's been a while since I saw those movies, but I'm seeing a comparison there. But more specifically, again, your specials are engineered weapons, so there's no regulation of them because you know you don't do that for the gun that you holster, except again your gun isn't sentient.
Exactly. I think you hit it right on the head. Like, X-Men was one of my favorite comic books growing up. To me, it always hit home because, I mean, X-Men was basically about civil rights, right? You know, Magneto and Professor X, or Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. I think that's one of the reasons why the X-Men comic books have lasted so long, is because that is a universal story.
Right.
Right. The oppressed fighting against their oppressors. And in terms of the specials, you know, it's very similar, where you have this superpowered minority fighting for their rights and being held down by humankind. So, yeah, I mean, X-Men was a huge inspiration to me while I was writing this, simply because I liked the ideas they were playing with. And I really gravitated towards the idea of trying to control a group of people. Like you said, you know, registering mutants. Like, what do we do when there's a group of people that we think are dangerous? Like, humanity usually doesn't show its best self in those situations. It generally reacts pretty poorly.
Yep.
I have to ask, were there any non-book inspirations? Because the first thing that pops into my head when you're describing the story is the Second Renaissance from the Matrix series. Like, humans create machines, machines become sentient, machines overthrow humans.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I remember this was a long time ago. I don't know if you guys ever watched when the Matrix movies, I think before the whole trilogy had been released, they started releasing animated you know, versions, the Animatrix, I think they called it.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of that.
Yeah, that's where the Renaissance comes from.
Yeah, and I think my favorite one of those animated short stories was the one where they talk about the history of the machines and how they were used as industrial machines, and then they built their own country, and then they started getting too powerful. They started outpacing all the human economies, and so the humans went and dropped nuclear bombs on them, and that's how the war started, and that's how the machines eventually took over. So I think it's a pretty common storyline where you see something where humans have opened Pandora's box, they've released this new knowledge, this new power, and then when they realize they can't control it, they panic. Yep. Stories like The Matrix, The X-Men, I mean, even stories like movies like Ex Machina, where it's about creating AI and that AI becoming sentient and wanting to go out and live. I mean, I think those are hallmarks of sci-fi, right? Where we build something we can't control.
Absolutely.
I liked the idea, you know, humans creating something that, you know, screws them over. I liked the idea when it was presented by Asimov, if we're going to discuss science fiction, with the Foundation, but more specifically with his Caves of Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
In the first book, there's a character who's developing those positronic brains for military purposes because he wants a single one of these positronic, because like the military capital ships are still crewed by humans, but he's trying to create one that can be piloted by a single robotic positronic brain, which will have infinitely better response time and abilities and not need all the things that support human life. So it'll have better armaments and armor. But, you know, there's that aspect to it that I'm seeing, is that, you know, he's a xenophobe anyway, so he has his own issues, but I'm seeing that correlation there as well.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about it. There's also, I don't know where I was reading this, but it goes back to like the biblical story of Adam and Eve. It's, you know, the first man and the first woman created, they were created and put in this perfect garden. And then when they ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, like everything just went downhill from there, right? It's mm-hmm. like even God's creation, he couldn't control, and it just went out of control.
Yeah.
So it's strange how all these myths all have that similar theme of creation leading to unexpected consequences.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, it goes back to the theory that there's only certain number of actual stories and everyone's just doing different versions of those same stories over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The monomyth, I think, is called.
Right.
Yep.
Does your story offer any kind of perspective on, like, don't do X, Y, and Z, or bad things will happen, or, you know, here's how to solve this problem if it ever arises, or...
No, like, I was avoiding messages and morals when I was writing the story, and I think that's where it kind of reminded me of Game of Thrones. It's that it's just a group of flawed characters trying to survive, right? There's no black or white. Like, even there are evil humans, there are good specials. It's not about this is good, this is bad. It's about, okay, we're in this situation where humanity, or at least humanity in America, has now fallen off the top of the food chain. And like, how do people live now? How do they survive? Like, what choices do they make? So there are multiple characters and viewpoints in this novel. But for me, I didn't want to leave with a message. I just wanted it to be more about what does humanity mean in like such a dark and grim future, right? Like, how do you remain human in that situation?
Mm-hmm. I like that.
So as part of our larger discussion of sci-fi versus fantasy, I mean, a lot of the same story tropes come up. Basically, it comes down to typically a sci-fi story could have fantastical elements. And I mean, a lot of it kind of deals with humanity or some form of still built on the structure of our society that we know of, but somehow evolved, changed, or whatnot. While fantasy can be an entirely different society, different world, everything different from there. Is that how you kind of see it? Or I'm just trying to figure out the clear definition here.
Right. So, I mean, I've definitely read more sci-fi than I have fantasy. Like fantasy, I've read the classics like Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. The Golden Compass, in the Game of Thrones series. For me, it's like which direction you're looking in, right? Like sci-fi is obviously looking forward. And I feel fantasy, even though it can have lots of magical elements and fantastical elements, it's always kind of looking back to this age of almost like chivalry and heroism and like this lost romance. There's almost this nostalgic element to it. Like, even when I'm watching the Game of Thrones TV show, like, it's an age of heroes, right? It's an age where you can believe in magic. It's an age where there is still, like, this grand romance about the society and the culture, and the rules are very clear. Whereas sci-fi, I feel you're looking at futures where the rules are not clear, where things have expanded out of human control, and it's a much more confusing time. Right. At least the sci-fi I've read is like trying to contend with this world that's very different from the world of the fantasy world, where it's just like, we know what's going on. We know who the good guys are, the bad guys are, for the most part. And it kind of harkens back to this nostalgia we have for a simpler time.
Hmm. That's an interesting point. Yeah.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of fantasy, I mean, Paul's book included, it's almost like a medieval time period.
Yeah, I mean, most fantasy basically is regressionary.
Right.
There has, you know, it's either going backward in time, or you are going so far forward in time after an apocalyptic event that things have gone backward. So my favorite example of that would be the Shannara series by Terry Brooks.
Right.
Because you have evidence of previous technology. You have evidence of the machines, of the skyscrapers. But there was some conflict in the past, and you have no idea what it is, that the technology has been replaced by magic, which is where you get the druids from and all that.
Okay.
There are some science fiction stories. I think I mentioned his name at least once a show, but Jonathan Mellweller.
Right.
I say his name at least once a show at this point, because he writes all the stuff I'm reading. He has a science fiction series, but you know, there is the point where one person's science is another person's magic. So the characters are interacting with alien technology, but it's so far advanced, it might as well be magic to them still, even in a science fiction where they have, you know, plasma rifles and space travel and dark matter engines and those kind of things. But it's still sufficiently advanced to them that it might as well be fantasy.
Well, I mean, considering, like, let's say, like, American Gods by Neil Gaiman. That is at least more fantasy. I mean, it's contemporary time period, but it's discussing the fantasy of the god, the ancient gods. You know, and in the book, you had Odin, you had Loki, you had Anansi, and all these other gods from ancient cultures, mixing with the new god, the god of technology and the god of entertainment and the and all of that. And of course, for the TV show, they added Easter and a couple others. And I mean, obviously, there isn't, I mean, that's more of a, even though it's contemporary, it's more of a fantastical tale.
Did you guys ever play that video game growing up, StarCraft?
Yes.
Yeah, so for me, like, that was one of my favorite games of all time. And I think it melded science fiction and fantasy in a really interesting way for me, in the sense that it was very futuristic. You had spaceships, you had aliens, you had all these armor-clad warriors. But it felt very much like a fantasy story to me, because you had the lead character, they had like the sense of honor. There was this sense of fighting, you know, for the old way. Forget what the Zerg, I think that's what it was called, the evil alien. Mm-hmm.
The Zerg,
Yeah, and the storyline around that entire video game was just so dense and rich with so many characters and cultures and, you know, languages. It was just, to me, it had that immersive experience.
Right.
Which fantasy does.
I'm going to give you some on-podcast homework. So, for science fiction, fantasy blend, have you heard of the game Warhammer?
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
Okay, so you want to look up Warhammer 40,000, Warhammer 40K.
Okay.
The rumor mill that I'm inclined to believe is that StarCraft was originally supposed to be like a computer game version of Warhammer 40K, but due to falling outs with Games Workshop and Blizzard went their own way, Games Workshop went their own way, and you now have these two exceptionally powerful franchises. which get more powerful every day. But you, in the Warhammer 40K universe, you have everything you just described. You have these heavily armored tanks, these heavily armored power suit warriors fighting alongside basic infantrymen who are still using bayonets, who are going up against Zerg-like creatures, Protoss-like aliens. But at the same time, they're also going into battle against orcs, you know, who are wielding clubs still, essentially. And your heroes still have swords, except they're like laser swords, plasma rifles. They have that blend between both of them. And you have magic. You have demons. You have demonic possession. You have psychers. So you have psychic abilities. You also do have straight up magic. So you have that royal blend there that, if you look into it, my first words to you are, you're welcome. The next set of words, which I have to immediately follow the you're welcome up with, is, I'm so, so sorry. Because the universe is that in depth. And yeah, I'm very sorry.
No, I'm getting psyched just hearing you talk about it. It sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, take StarCraft. And instead of having three factions, mm-hmm. you have 14 or 16.
So there goes the next 2 years of my life. I'm going to be playing this game all day.
Well, don't do that, because the average expenditure on this will be a couple $1,000s.
Oh, wow.
At a minimum.
There is actually a store in Springfield, Virginia, here that only sells Warhammer stuff.
Yeah.
I drove past one day with my oldest daughter, and there was an ice cream shop around the corner, so, you know, priorities. But right. I saw, and it was like, it had like a very basic name, like a GameStop or something. Not GameStop, but, you know, something.
Games Workshop. Yeah.
Games Workshop.
But Warhammer 40K miniatures and like the other 40K spin-offs,
yep.
all those miniatures, like, just ready to paint, ready to go. That's
yep.
all they do.
Yep.
Yep.
I mean, I'll tell you guys, I've played these games at this point for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't invested anything in this game in about 3 years now. But in the time I was investing, I have my collection, and I could have had a brand new car. And I'm not talking a low-end model here. That's what people invest in this game.
Oh, jeez.
Right,
wow. Want to know something really weird?
Go for it.
There is a My Little Pony mod of Warhammer 40K.
I'll give you one better.
Friendship forever.
I'll give you one better on that one. I saw a professionally painted army of the Space Marines' main army that was all My Little Pony style. If you ever want to go into making a lot more money than you already are, professionally painting these models for people, I've seen these armies go for, you know, you're looking at 100-120 models professionally painted, 10-25 grand.
Dang.
Sometimes, jeez. Yeah.
Wow.
There are companies across the globe where their whole business model is painting these things to godlike levels. And you can send them your models, or you can just buy the models straight. And like a basic tier one for like a good level thing can be like 20 of these models for like $300 or $400 at just good painting. You want more? Jack up the price.
Wow.
Yeah. We're kids, all in the wrong business.
Get your kids into games. They'll never have money to spend on drugs.
It's more expensive than crack.
Yeah. And you know,
because
I have friends who live in New York City.
And on that note.
On that note.
All right, well, thank you.
Speaking of drugs, we have a movie that they are remaking.
Yes.
Where they sniff powder.
Yeah.
Speaking of drugs.
Yes, we didn't get to that point yet. Yes.
That's a segue for you. So, let's talk about the remake of Dune that's coming out.
All right, yeah. Quick on that. I know we meant to, I should have gotten to that before we got into the interview. But yes, they are remaking Dune. For good or for bad. It looks like it's for good because it's Denis Villeneuve.
Yep.
And the first movie is not going to be trying to do the entire first book.
See, I'm a little, like, I'm on the fence on this one. Uh-huh. So, like, the interview is saying that they're going to do the first half of the first book.
Right.
So, cool, sounds good. That's a lot. It basically gets you to where Paul dies and becomes Mod, you know, he dies Mod-y. In the desert storm, comes out, blah, blah, blah. I have read this book way too many times. Mm-hmm. I have spoilers from any point I'm talking about Dune. However, we have the movie version that had Sting in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We also had the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries.
Children of Dune.
No, yes. No. They did Dune.
They did do Dune? I saw they did Children of Dune as well.
They did. They did Dune, which was 3 2-hour specials. Okay. And then they did Children of Dune.
Okay.
So, you know, the original 3-part miniseries was the original Dune book. And, you know, they actually did it properly. Hmm. I mean, it was the much lower budget that, you know, the Sci-Fi Channel originally had.
Right.
But they actually did it with the proper weirding technique where it was actually knife fighting and not the voice weapon box bullshit that was in the Sting movie. I get upset.
It's okay.
So, like, I'm excited that, you know, we have a proper name going on. I'm excited also that Brian Herbert, you know, Frank's son, is involved in the process. Mm-hmm. But I'm also at the point where it's like, can we stop remaking this stuff?
No.
Again, like, find something new. So, you know, Amazon is doing the Wheel of Time from the look of things, so no one's done that. Fantastic. Someone's trying to do the Lord of Rings as an episodic thing, and I'm like, can we just stop with these things that have been done already and just find something new? Because you guys need new stories in Hollywood. You people can't just keep running over these same ideas, because, yes, we American people are stupid and we'll still give you our money, but stop it.
See, here's the thing, though. Things have been remade for years, and that's, by the way, that's J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay that are developing the LOTR series for Amazon. But how many times have Shakespeare's plays been remade?
Right. No, I know.
How many times has The Great Gatsby been made into a movie? It's 3 or 4 times now.
Yeah.
There are some stories that are just so good that they're going to be retold again and again, and retold for new generations, retold in new styles. It's one thing, it shows how great that story is, those stories are, that they are getting remade. And we didn't need 2 more Spider-Man movies, but that just goes to show how good the Spider-Man story was.
No, that goes to show you how poor the previous ones were.
Well, no, I mean, the first 3 Spider-Man movies were, well, the first 2 were excellent. Then the Andrew Garfield ones, not so good. But,
and then we have whatever his name is now.
Yeah.
I call him Dusty.
Tom Holland. Spoiler.
No, he's Dusty.
Tom Holland. Okay, all right, we're getting aside. My battery's running out. So we have Rishi. Have you read the Dune series?
No, I'm ashamed to say I haven't. Dude. I started reading it when I was young, and I never made it past the first chapter.
All right, I need to apologize. We never should have had you on this podcast. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a requirement.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all right.
Told me Richie lives in Jersey. I will find him.
He will read Dune to you. He even enacts some of the scenes.
Out the window with the boombox.
He'll track me down and he'll throw the book through my windows.
That's a big book, so that can do some damage.
I will figure this out.
I know, like I said, I'm ashamed. I have to get to it. I will read it.
Rishi, I have a Dune shelf on my library.
Just so you know, you don't have to read all the books. I made that mistake. And by the end, by...
just need to read the first one. Just the first one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you're getting to, you know, the Heretic of Dune, you've gone too far.
So. Okay.
All right. Well, we got to wrap this up. Rishi, thank you for being our guest this month. Please tell our listening audience where they can find you and where they can find your book, One Nation Under Gods.
Right. So thank you guys for having me. I am on Facebook. I also have my own website, rishiray.com. One Nation Under Gods is now available for a pre-order on amazon.com as a Kindle ebook and also as a paperback. It will be going on sale later in August.
Nice.
My battery's about to die. So thank you, Rishi. Remember to reach out to us on Facebook, facebook.com/publishpodcast, Twitter at publishpodcast, email publishpodcast@as21.com. This has been chapter 41 of the Publish Me podcast, sci-fi versus fantasy. We'll be back next month. I'm not have a book to guest just yet, but hopefully it's someone we've discussed in the past. So I'll keep you guys updated on that. For Publish Me Podcast, I am Keith F. Shovlin.
I'm Ron Gainer.
And as always, I'm Paul Dingson Russell. Remember, where there are thoughts and ideas, there are stories. We'll see you next month.
Copyright 2018, AS21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved. AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?